Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
Hey guys, Patrick here from Real College Podcast. This week we're going to do something a little bit different. Last week, the guys from Rock and Roll Over, Radio K's morning show, did an interview with Dr. Amy Kircher, who is a professor here at the U, but is also the director of the Food Protection and Defense Institute, which is part of Homeland Security. They talked with her for about 20 minutes, and we decided that this week we're going to play the entirety of the interview for our podcast. And the next week, next Monday, a week from today, we're going to be doing an entire show based around food. So that should be a lot of fun as well, so make sure you tune into that. But for now, here is Dr. Amy Kircher with the guys from Rock and Roll Over.
Radio K's Rock and Roll Over, real early radio. That was just Kate LeBon with Love Is Not Love off of her latest record, Crab Day. Before that, we had some Aureal Pink, Dazed in Daydreams off of the record, Pom Pom. Putting us at 8:16 here at the beginning of this hour. And we have a special guest in studio with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dr. Amy Kircher. Exactly. You are a professor here at the university, but also, I would say, more importantly, the director of the Food Protection and Defense Institute.
I am. Thank you for having me this morning.
Thanks so much for coming in. It's so great to have you. And you're giving a talk this Thursday, part of the University of Minnesota's Headliner Series on the St. Paul campus of the university at 7 o'clock. And the title of it is Protecting Your Lunch, Food Fraud and Adulteration. Could you kind of explain to us and our listeners this idea of food adulteration, which I think might be kind of a new concept for a lot of people, at least that terminology?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I hope protecting your lunch gets everybody's attention. It's something that we're passionate about over at the Institute. We sit on the St. Paul campus. We're a center of excellence for the Department of Homeland Security and just happen to be at the University of Minnesota because of all the connections we have here on campus with faculty that work on food and work on the systems that help support our food system, and then all the food companies we have here in the Twin Cities and actually outstate as well, the big agriculture production. So when we talk about adulteration, what we mean is the intentional adulteration of food. So somebody knowingly is doing something to our food system for some purpose. And typically we bucket those into three categories. The first being terrorism. So our Institute, as you would imagine, being part of DHS, was created after 9/11. So terrorism is sort of that first category where we worry about someone putting something in the system because of their nefarious acts related to terrorism. So that's sort of the first category. The second category is what we would call sabotage. So that could be a company trying to affect another company, or it could be a disgruntled employee. So that's when somebody is upset with work or another coworker, and they might do something to the food just to cause brand damage or harm to the company. And then the third category is what we call economically motivated adulteration. You may notice food fraud. It's when people are trying to make a buck and they put something in trying to either extend it or misrepresent food. So great examples might be the horse meat scandal a couple of years ago when somebody put horse meat into ground beef and we didn't do DNA testing, so you couldn't catch it. And once we found horse meat, we found things like fox and sheep and zebra and kangaroo and all kinds of other species of meat that were ground up.
Yeah, that's really, it's really horrifying because I guess for me at least, I've always thought it like that's Sinclair Lewis era.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's not happening anymore is my thought. And then I'm kind of hearing about this, you know, that one pops up and it's like, oh, okay, this is still an issue. And I read here that it could be getting worse maybe, or it's not. There's more out there than we realize.
I think I'd call it an iceberg. We know the tip of the iceberg. We're catching some things. We're getting much smarter about it. But there's a whole sort of activity happening below the surface that we haven't caught. Because remember, these individuals, unlike terrorists, are not overt. They're very covert. They want to be secretive because they don't want to be caught because they want to keep making money. So they try to evade any mitigation we put into our system. So it might be that they are substituting species of fish because they can sell you a cheaper fish and sell it represented as a higher value fish. Maybe mm-hmm. they're selling an expensive spice and it happens to be not the best color. So they're adding a dye into it to make it bright red paprika because as consumers, that's what we like to buy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff, I mean, what exactly are you guys doing to go in there and catch this? Because it's kind of, I mean, you can't just monitor all these.
Yeah, it seems like it would be very hard to be preemptive towards it.
Absolutely, you're spot on. We do several things to preempt it, and one of it is we have a huge consortium of people to help us. So this is completely a team approach. There's no one faculty member in the world that can attack this. It takes researchers, it takes companies, and it takes our governments to try to figure out and catch these folks where they are adulterating. So we do things like study supply chains and look at things from farm to fork. We also have coined some new phrases like udder to butter or boat to throat. So looking at an entire system from the start to the finish and understanding where there might be a vulnerability in that system that somebody could exploit. If we understand that, then we can find mitigation steps. So in horse meat, we needed to add DNA testing because people were adulterating in that way and we weren't catching them because our testing wasn't accurate. The same might be true of honey. Honey gets transshipped, so moves from country to country, and they changed the label of origin to mask where it's coming from because there might be something in the honey or a tax duty that a country is avoiding. So then we need to understand routing. So supply chains are important. We also have researchers working in labs to come up with new methods to detect when something's in our food that shouldn't be there. So there's a lot of laboratory work happening around the world to be able to look into our foods. Now, think about a food production facility, though. As you can imagine, milk is like, or Hershey chocolates are scurrying past on a conveyor belt. So we need to be able to detect at the speed of production, which is sometimes the most complicated challenge, is how do you detect very rapidly knowing that food is produced and consumed quite quickly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's kind of finding a place in between there and finding like that perfect spot in the middle to kind of get in there, check it out, make sure everything's okay. And there's really no one way to check on everyone because all these foods are so different.
Yeah, it's a stacked mitigation strategy, so we have to look in different ways. I would even argue that we're starting to look at and predict ways where the food system could be disrupted. So we use big data and algorithms to say, because perhaps Ebola happened and 70% of our world's chocolate comes from the West Africa region, and we've seen a decline in harvest during that time where we had Ebola coming out of the fields, we have less cocoa available on the market. Well, would someone maybe extend cocoa and put something into it to sell it at a higher profit margin because prices spiked? Well, when you look historically, absolutely they would. They put into cocoa husk, they put arrowroot into it, and sometimes we've caught them with dirt.
Ew.
Oh,
man.
Icky. That's just so bad. So I guess thinking, you know, dirt in your cocoa, what can we do to make sure, you know, we're not eating these adulterated foods? I mean, because it's obviously
so hard,
close to impossible to avoid.
Yeah.
I mean, to tell when you're just getting it off the shelf.
Right. It's a real challenge for consumers because you really are at that end of farm to fork. You are the fork. So you have to really be confident in everybody ahead of you to do their job so that you're consuming a product that isn't counterfeit. So there's a couple things I would argue that us as consumers can do. And right, I go home and feed a family every day. Think about where your food is coming from and look at the label. So when you buy olive oil or extra virgin olive oil, one of my favorite adulterated products, it should come from a region that grows olives, right? It shouldn't come from Iceland. When you buy cocoa or a chocolate product, right, those are cocoa beans. Those should come from an area that's warm and can grow cocoa beans. Secondly, you should pay the price food should cost. By that, I mean you shouldn't buy a, this is a very silly example, buy a $2 filet mignon steak off the back of a truck on the corner, right? So you should pay what you think food should cost. So don't undercut or underprice. When prices are undercut, often they might have an adulterated component. And there's one study that says almost 10% of everything on the grocery store shelves is adulterated.
Ooh. Oh my goodness.
So look in your grocery cart next time you're shopping and
read the labels.
10% of this might have some counterfeit product. And then the last thing I'd say is buy from a reputable brand. You know, if you're buying from the farmer's market or you're buying locally, buy from somebody you know and trust, right? And the thing about local is it's you're close to the source, right? So there's less steps for people to monkey in the system. But even when you're in the grocery store, buy from a brand you know makes good quality food.
Yeah, so very good. So it's really kind of, it's essentially just being more aware of what's going on with all. Are there any certain foods out there that are more susceptible to adulteration? Because I mean, it seems like maybe your fresh vegetables, hard to
yeah,
you can't really substitute, you know, something for a tomato,
that fake corn.
You guys are good. I might just hire you. Yes. Yeah,
are you hiring?
Yeah, maybe.
These college students need jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I always say the banana is the thing I don't worry about because there is a peel and you are taking it off.
Yeah.
Unlike a cantaloupe that you cut through, right? You slice through. And so anything on the outside might come through to the fruit. So the things that you'd be more concerned about would be things that are maybe in bulk or mixed and things that have a high dollar value. Spices come to mind because spices are mixed and ground and they're typically expensive. Mm-hmm. So what else could someone mix in a spice to extend it or add to it to boost color? We had one example last summer, which was really concerning, where we had cumin showing up in plants with peanut protein added to boost the color because there was a bad cumin harvest. Well, peanut isn't supposed to be in cumin. So if you are somebody with an allergy, it's really concerning because you would add cumin not expecting peanut, and all of a sudden you're having a reaction and don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the spices thing, coming into this interview, I was thinking about all the types of food that could really be susceptible, but spices never even, like, was on my radar at all. But now that's very very concerning to hear.
Yeah, just picturing the potted meat. That's my mind goes to every time. Not things like spices.
With someone just adding some food dye into it, like making it a better color.
Anything that has a long supply chain that makes multiple moves from farm to fork, you know, that's something we need to look at the system and vulnerabilities. Things that have multiple components. I always use in college, a manwich, right? A can of manwich probably has a lot of ingredients. In our institute, we use as an exemplary a cheeseburger having multiple components. So I'll test you on air. How many ingredients in a typical cheeseburger?
Let's say
total ingredients from each component.
Yes.
Cheeseburger and bun. Are we just going to say that is our baseline cheeseburger?
Okay.
Three.
I'll say 30.
84.
84.
So when you think about adding pickles or lettuce, the bun itself, things that might be put into a patty to preserve it, a typical recipe for a cheeseburger is 84 ingredients or 80 or more. So think that for me, that represents 80 supply chains I have to worry about and make sure are secure for you to eat a cheeseburger.
So it's, a really complicated process. A lot of people working on this, and that's just kind of the economic side of the, so the terrorism part of it, how much has that come up?
I think we're always looking at terrorism as an opportunity to exploit food. So we do have documentation that was uncovered in 2002. This is after some of the raids on Al-Qaeda properties or training grounds that they had considered using food as the vehicle for a weapon of mass destruction. And by that, I mean they were going to put something in food to cause harm. Mm-hmm. So we know it's been considered several times. We know it's been executed for centuries, that there have been these adulterations from a terrorist aspect. As recently as this past decade, we've had several incidents in the Middle East where terrorists have used water specifically to adulterate and then left that water in law enforcement or checkpoints. They may have done it in cafeterias. This past year, when we had the France attacks, there was a jihadist call that went along with it. And in that call, there was a statement that said, poison the food and water of our enemies. So we know that we have to be continuously vigilant, that this is always being considered.
Exactly. So your organization, is it part of the university or is it part of the Department of Homeland Security?
Both. So okay. We are at the University of Minnesota. We're all University of Minnesota staff. Our funding comes from a variety of places, with the bulk core funding coming from the Department of Homeland Security. After 9/11, they've created several centers of excellence at U.S. Academic institutions to look at threats to our homeland. We're the food center. There's also an explosive center, and there's a coastal hazards. They've just added a Arctic center to look at the Arctic region and threats there. They've now added a cyber center to start looking at how attacks might come in via cyber mechanisms and networks.
Oh, yeah. Cyber. And so you guys are on St. Paul campus. That's the same place where your talk is going on Thursday. Are you going to go beyond, you know, what we've talked about today? Like, on Thursday, what are you going to get into?
Sure. I'll share a little bit of what we've talked about today, maybe in more detail, and talk about some examples of where we're seeing counterfeit happening and food fraud happening. We'll talk about sabotage. We'll talk about how do we protect it, and what are the skills we need to develop in our workforce, and what are those tools that we need to start applying together collectively as the academy, the industry, and government regulators.
Exactly. And that's happening this Thursday on the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota at the Continuing Education and Conference Center. And you know, if that sounds interesting to you, we have a couple pairs of tickets that we're going to toss out into the world very soon here.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Amy Kircher, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Do you have anything else you'd like to add to our listeners?
No, keep eating.
Yeah. Stay vigilant.
Stay vigilant. Be safe.
Keep eating, but eat mindfully.
Yeah, eat smart.
Mm-hmm. And I guess before we go off the air, should we say the official giveaway?
Oh, yeah,
ticket
sure.
Giveaway. Let's see if I can do this from memory. So we got a couple pairs of tickets to give away. It is happening this Thursday, like I said, St. Paul campus of the university. And only one Radio K giveaway can be won by any individual during a 14-day time period. Student staff and active on-air DJs of Radio K are not eligible for giveaways. For a complete list of giveaway rules, go to RadioK.org. To win the tickets, just be the first caller when you hear the K at 612-626-4770. That's 612-626-4770. Win yourself a pair of tickets. And, yeah. Dr. Amy Kircher, thanks so much for coming in this morning. And, should we get back into some tunes here?
Yeah, let's get back into the music. This next track that we have coming up is from Arc Welder. We're going to hear the song Missing. It's off the record Jacket Made in Canada. And it is right here on Radio K's Rock and Rollover, Real Early Radio.